Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, as well as on the WDIY app and many streaming services. Today is January 15th, 2025. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 43,221, the NASDAQ at 19,511, and the S&P at 5,949. Tonight, I'm talking about retirement planning. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down, and Bob will bring it into the studio. You can also send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. Again, tonight, retirement planning. So what do I mean by retirement planning? There's so much involved in that, but I think that what I really would like to stress is what are some of the strategies or, tasks or things you can do to get ready for that, to think about it. Remember, we say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive, and it can make a real difference. And sometimes this is a good exercise, regardless if you're thinking about retirement, but why it's especially a good exercise as we're, maturing and getting maybe into, our late 50s or early 60s is, number one, you still may have more time to do that retirement planning. The other thing is that sometimes you are unaware of surprises that could hit you. I've had clients who all of a sudden get the notice or the letter that their job is being eliminated, whether it could be their department, their position, the company could be moving, you could have moved and had expected to be working remotely, and all of a sudden they're telling you to come back in the office and you can't because you're on the other side of the country. So there are a number of reasons we want to think about our retirement planning. Obviously, any regular listener knows that I do talk about saving as soon as you can, as fast as you can. The earlier you start, the more options you have. And isn't that what this is all about? Attending to your financial life is simply really to give you options, because every aspect of our life is really driven by financial decisions that we've made. I mean, even if we can live frugally, we still have to buy food. We still have to pay utilities or have transportation, healthcare, those types of things. So the sooner you start thinking about this, obviously, the better. So this is really kind of going to be geared toward what are we thinking about as we get actually closer to those, retirement years, those golden years, someone may call them. So I'm going to kind of break this down into the when and the how. And the when, as I've just mentioned, is usually kind of, I really like people to think about it sooner, of course, but most definitely you don't want to wait past, even like 50 or 55. Really start thinking about it there, making sure that you have a nest egg. And I also like people to have different buckets of that nest egg, whether it's cash in the bank or savings accounts, retirement accounts, if you've been lucky enough to be able to have a Roth IRA, and then and or savings in like a joint account or individual account, a brokerage account, we'll call that non-qualified money. So to have kind of different options with that as well. So one of the first things I think you want to understand as well is when you're thinking about retirement planning, and if you're ahead of it, the day that you know it's time for you to retire, you're going to be in a pretty good position. I was just with my brother for the past several days down in Florida, had a wonderful time, and he said, you'll know when you know. And I think that when you know, you better be ready. We have a call. We have Stacy from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Stacy. This is Lori. Can you hear me?
Hi, I can hear you.
Great. Hi. Thank you for calling from North Carolina.
Well, I'm a former Lehigh Valley resident and a former WDIY volunteer. So we have crossed paths in the past.
Wonderful. How can we help you?
So this is a question about a tax refund.
Okay.
So if somebody made $2,610 mm-hmm. in 2023 mm-hmm. and the refund was $390
mm-hmm.
and then in 2024 made $22,622.61, and now the projected refund is only $12. This is a single person, no kids, no dependents, no weird, you know, deductions, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can it be $12? She went online and did it. I'm calling from a friend of mine, and she did mm-hmm. one of these things where she went online and, you know, you do like a projected refund, like what you're going to get, like,
uh-huh.
you know. Put in a bunch of information.
Okay.
So do you have any insight about that?
Stacy, a couple things could have happened. Number one, refunds are sometimes driven by the amount of federal tax withholding that is taken in wages. So that is number one. Number two, in 2023, if she made, you know, X amount of dollars, she still might have had other income on her return, but she may have been eligible even as a single person for something called the earned income tax credit. And that might be part of the $390 refund. I don't have clients who really get that, so I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. But when you're a low-income single, sometimes people think the earned income tax credit is only for people with families. That's not true. If you're single, you actually could be eligible for the earned income tax credit if you had earnings. And part of it could be refundable. So that could be part of that refund. She would have to look on her tax return to see what generated the $390. It might not be the tax withholdings that she had. It might actually be a credit that she received. She also may have been eligible for something called the Retirement Savers Credit. We'll actually work with clients who are in lower income to try to get them a Retirement Savers Credit. Now, the Retirement Savers Credit is a credit against tax, though. It's not typically a refundable credit, but if she had tax withholdings and tax, the tax could first be offset by the Retirement Savers Credit if she put money into like an IRA or a Roth IRA or a 401k, and then the tax withholding would have been refunded. So she really needs to look at her tax return to see what happened. For 2024, if she made $22,000, that is a lot more income. And the withholdings on that much income, though it seems like a lot more than the $2,610, she now might not be eligible for the earned income tax credit. I don't have my reference book here tonight. I just actually literally flew in and came into the studio. So my reference book would have told me, you know, what's the income tax credit income limit? But she might have been over it and not eligible for it as a single filer for 2024. And that could be part of the difference. Does that kind of make sense? Will you be able to explain that to her?
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And just to note, and I love this call because it does raise awareness. Sometimes people will think, oh, well, my employer withheld the tax. Why do I get a refund or why do I owe taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just because the employer withholds X amount doesn't mean it's the right amount. Because until we file our tax return, we don't know our filing status, we don't know our other income, we don't know our other deductions. So, you know, that's just ballparking. So it's always a good, I love that she's doing a projection and kind of having an idea of what it is. So
yeah. Well, I got burned 1 year because I didn't work 15 hours a week and they didn't take any federal tax out of my check.
Yep.
So I ended up owing and I never knew that. And then my mom was also in the same position. And I mean, I had another job. I could have just had them take it out of my school, right. My teaching salary, but I, whatever.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't $50,000. It was a couple hundred bucks, but I mean, still it was, unfortunate.
Right.
But then later on, I told my mom the same thing and she's like, oh, well, I never knew that. And my mom is all about, finance and money and everything. So,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So,
okay. Well, good luck. I hope that helps with your friend. And she can always listen to the podcast, later if she needs to. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Stacy. Thank you. Have a good night. Folks, we are at our first break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. The phone number for questions is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, as Stacy did, or give your question to Bob and Cindy. Again, 610-758-8810. I was able to quickly look up the earned income maximum adjusted gross income for taxpayers that are single for 2024, and the amount is $17,640. So, Stacy, if your friend made $22,000, she wouldn't be eligible for it. And I'm kind of guessing that could have been why she got a refund last year. So that's what I would look for, the earned income credit or perhaps, the retirement savers credit. The other thing I wanted to point out, Stacy mentioned something about people, owing and they're surprised. We have to look at withholdings, particularly if you work two jobs, because each employer obviously doesn't know that you're working this other job when they're looking at the tax withholding tables. This is all automated and it's done automatically based on your income. So when you fill out the W-4 form, when you start a new job, you tell them, your filing status, and you can tell them you don't have any kids, and you can tell them that there's another job that makes as much money. You check a box, I think it's 2C on the W-4. And or if you are married, the same thing would apply. You'd want to say married family joint, but checkbox to see that there's someone else who's making money. And that way they won't apply the full standard deduction to you. So watch out for that. Sometimes you owe because you didn't pay in enough. So be aware of that. So when we're talking about retirement planning, the big thing is to know your costs, and you want to do that because the day you say you know, you want to be ready for that. So my brother and I were talking about this, and he said he was started keeping track of his cost. He kind of knew he was going to be on this path to retire. He thought, it was almost time, and then he understood at the company where he worked, they often offered packages. So he thought he wanted to be ready for the day that they were going to offer a package. So he waited, and then lo and behold, they offered a package to him, and he was ready to go because he had understood his costs ahead of time. We have a caller. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. How can I help you tonight?
I needed to make some changes to our will, mm-hmm. and instead I was originally going to do like a codicil, mm-hmm. just tweak the one. I ended up going online and doing a whole new will, and now I haven't like notarized it or finalized it. I just had it done, and I'm wondering, was that really the better way to go? It was like a free online thing. Does it matter?
Well, for the will or for, you said online notarization. Did you try to do an online notarization or you just did an online will?
I did an online will, so I'm sorry, I kind of jumped ahead of myself because I also had a question if Pennsylvania was one of the states that allows remote online notarization.
They've started that, I think, but I do think you probably should check to see if wills are one of them. So I think, I happen to have my laptop tonight. I normally don't, but I just quickly Googled it, and it said Pennsylvania allows online notaries to perform the same notarial acts as traditional notaries, including POAs, bills of sale, tax returns, and many more. But I would probably, and it says more and more counties now accept documents notarized. I would just be careful. And if you're going to try that, I haven't had anyone who's done it. We actually were researching that when it was first coming out, and we decided, at our office not to, pursue that. But I think it's probably going to become more and more common. But if you at least print your will, you could always take it in person to a notary. I know that, it's very, very important to have original documents. If anything were to happen to you, they want original documents. And typically they want witnesses. It's called a self-subscribing will. They'll want witnesses notarized as well. So with the online notary, I'm not sure how they would do that with your witnesses and you yourself.
Okay.
So that,
all right.
To
so
me,
I
would
should
be the little difference, That would be the difference in the document as to the notary. So, but, bottom line, if you did change your will and you did it online, and you can at least print it and go have it notarized somewhere.
Okay, that would be good. Do it online, print it out, go to a notary, mm-hmm. with witnesses, get that taken care of. And then so that original would what, stay in our safe, or does that go?
Right, once you have your new will, and I'm not necessarily suggesting one go online to do a will, because you said go online and do a will. I'm not suggesting that one go online and do a will, but if you have gone online to prepare your will, then yes, you could print it off and then have it notarized. And yes, you need to put the will in a secure place, because that is what the Orphans Court or the Register of Wills, would require the original will when you pass away. So keep that secure safe somewhere, either in a safe at home or at a bank in a safe deposit box. Typically, some attorneys keep them as well, but you're not working with an attorney, and not all attorneys keep them. So if you have it, just make sure that you've your personal representatives that you've selected will know where it is if anything happens to you.
Okay, and pretty much the same then too with your living will, your medical power of attorney.
Yeah, and that's a little bit easier. I don't think that's as big of a deal with the notary, so you might be able to do the online notary for that. But if you're already going to a notary for your will with your witnesses, then you probably could just do everything all at once.
Okay.
I don't think notaries cost very much, but I don't know. We have notaries in our office, FYI.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night. Thank you for calling.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. So as my brother had mentioned, he started keeping track of his costs. And I think that's a really great exercise at any point in your financial life. Any regular listener knows that I say the people who know how much money they're spending are the people with money. So, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You become much more aware of what you're spending. The same thing happens just like with dieting. When you I count carbs now. The more aware I am of carbs, it's like, holy smokes, had no idea. So until you start, paying attention to these things, you don't realize if you're not watching what you're spending. It's so easy to drop, you know, 10 bucks here, 10 bucks there, 10 bucks here, 10 bucks there. Next thing you know, you just spend an extra $1,000 and you didn't even realize you did it. It does add up. It makes a difference. So track your cost. Now, my brother had said that he actually overestimated his cost and he underestimated his cash flow. So when we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about what some of those costs are, what you want to pay attention to, because some of them can be significant, and what kind of cash flow you might be able to anticipate. And don't forget, it's not the gross amount you have to think about. It's the net amount. And I'll talk about that when we come back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY. Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11 offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. And Bob and Cindy are on standby for those questions. I want to mention one other thing. When I mentioned my brother received a package, like an early retirement package, typically we see those in larger companies. So if you're not at a larger company, chances are you might not have that available to you. But if you are at a larger company and you have seen or had, you know, experience of that in the past, if that would be something that you could avail yourself to, it could be a real game changer for you. But I do want to caution you. My brother said some of his experience was he knew he needed to wait until they offered the package. He raised his hand, and there were other people who did not raise their hand right away. They kind of waited a while. Well, guess what? The company said, nope, you didn't raise your hand soon enough. You're not getting the package. Goodbye. You've retired. You're done, and you don't get a package. So just be really sensitive to that if it is available to. The other thing I like to point out to people also before you retire, if you have a flexible spending account, the flexible spending account is that one where you can put aside money for childcare and or health care. There's two kind of features of those. You need to spend that money typically before you leave, so that if you have a flexible spending account, you put money in, you know, starting in January, you said you were going to put in $500. You want to spend that $500 before you leave. Otherwise, it gets turned over to the company. So please be aware of that. So let's talk about some of the costs that you really have to pay attention to in this pre-retirement retirement planning scenario. Healthcare is huge, you guys. Healthcare is huge. So if you think you're going to retire before age 65, when you would be Medicare eligible, and I'm guessing that everyone's going to be Medicare eligible if you're talking about retiring, because you've had to work to get so many quarters in to be eligible for Medicare. I'm going to assume you're eligible at 65, but you retire before 65, how are you going to fill the gap for the health insurance that typically you would have through your employer? Well, there could be a number of options for you. Number one, if you are married and you have a spouse, your spouse, if they are working, may have employer coverage, and you may be eligible to for a family, you know, health insurance. So if you have a spouse who's working, that could be one of your healthcare options. If you're either you're married, but maybe your spouse doesn't have health care, or your spouse is retiring at the same time as you, and it's before age 65, what are you going to do about health care? The second option for you could be COBRA, and COBRA gosh, off the top of my head, I don't even know how long COBRA lasts nowadays. Might be like 6 months. Don't quote me on that. So COBRA is the health insurance that is required for employers to provide to you if you were on, you know, you had health insurance through work. They have to continue to offer it to you, but you don't necessarily get the employee cost. You will have whatever the cost is. They will give that information to you, provide that information to you, tell you how much it costs for how many months. Now, sometimes, again, if you get these early retirement packages, sometimes the employer will, you know, say, hey, we'll cover your COBRA insurance for 3 months, and then you get it for another 6 months, and then you're responsible for that cost without the employer supplement. So COBRA health insurance can be more pricey than what you were paying as an employee, and that only lasts for a certain period of time. Now, you may not need to take COBRA. Maybe you're going to be, you know, eligible for Medicare, you know, fairly shortly, or perhaps your COBRA coverage would still be too expensive for you, and you may be eligible for health insurance on the marketplace or healthcare.gov or penny.com. You know, the show's out of Pennsylvania, and we have penny.com in Pennsylvania, and certain other states have their, you know, their own healthcare network, or you go on healthcare.gov to find what health insurance would be available to you through the exchange. When you get health insurance through the exchange, you may be eligible for what we call the advanced premium tax credit. So there could be some government help to offset the cost of the health insurance getting it through the exchange. Okay, so that would be another option. An additional option would be you just go buy private health insurance, and maybe your income is so high you wouldn't be eligible for an advance credit or that government help to pay for the premiums. So you just go buy private health insurance. If your income is low and you don't do it through the exchange and you just buy it privately, you can't go back now and get that premium tax credit. You have to get the insurance on the exchange. I've had so many people who think it's some kind of discount, bottom basement kind of health insurance coverage. It's not. It's the health insurance you can get. Like, I've had clients tell me, oh my gosh, I had no idea. It's the same insurance I had when I was working. So don't think it's like bottom, what did I call it? Bottom basement pricing or health insurance. It's not. It's, you know, it's all of the health insurance companies that you would expect to see if you were buying it privately. In fact, there are a number of health insurance providers that even have kind of consumer retail stores now that you can walk in and they will help you navigate what health insurance might be available to you. But you can also go online. You know, I check out prices all the time for clients, particularly. You just go penny.com, you put in your filing status or who you're covering. Is it just you? Is it you and your spouse? Is it you, your spouse, and a child? What zip code do you live in? What county do you live in? And what is your anticipated income? And then they will give you an idea of whether or not you qualify for a credit against that health insurance premium. And you may be someone who could kind of manage your income on your tax return. I have a number of clients. We can manage the income on the tax return that in such a way that the income qualifies them for a bit of a credit. And you can get that credit up front. It's called the advanced premium tax credit. Or if you think your income's too high, but you go on the exchange anyway, because you're not sure, and you file your tax return and your income's lower, then you can get the advance credit when you file your tax return. So you don't lose out on it. Now, of course, if you tell them your income is, you know, $25,000 and it ends up being $2 million, well, you're going to have to pay back some of that credit or all of that credit. Okay, so just watch out for that. So that's one of the biggest costs. The other thing you really need to watch for and be aware of is what other costs do you have while you're working that you seem to be able to manage fine, but if you lose your salary, are you still going to be able to keep up with these costs? And what I'm talking about here is, do you have a mortgage? Do you have a car payment? Do you have credit cards? Don't forget about those, because as I'll talk about a little bit later in the show, is sometimes people think, oh, I'm going to make, you know, $4,000 a month in Social Security. Well, number one, you might not be eligible for $4,000 in Social Security. I'll talk about why you might not get that. You've got to think about the net income that's coming in that's going to help pay for, you know, all of these fixed costs that you still might have, the mortgage, car payment, credit card. So maybe you want to think about managing those before you retire as part of your retirement planning. Maybe either work down the mortgage or work down the car payment, work down the credit card, or just, you know, pay those things off. Maybe not the mortgage, and I'll talk about that as well when we come back from this break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or off air. If you're not comfortable, give your question to Cindy. Let's talk about these costs for a minute. So part of retirement planning, remember, you're going to retire, which means you're not going to have a salary anymore. You might have some cash flow that could replace that, but typically the cash flow that comes in once we retire is typically less than what we were making as our salary. So we have to kind of pay attention to our cost. So when we talk about cost and what we can control before we retire, car payments, credit cards, this is all part of watching what we're spending and knowing what we're spending and, you know, what kind of costs we have. Car payments typically have higher interest rates. Credit cards have higher interest rates. So we want to kind of work those down because we really don't want that debt going forward. We don't want our, you know, cash flow going to pay high interest payments for things that, you know, we bought a while ago. Let's talk about the mortgage for a minute, though. Here's my take on mortgages. I often refer to this with clients as, is it leverage or is it debt? When I talk about debt, I typically think in my head that it's that you don't have the money to pay off that money you borrowed. That is a debt. So you have, you know, taken out a loan and you don't have the money to repay it except monthly, that's a debt. But leverage is you've borrowed money and that borrowing cost is much, much lower than what you may be able to make on your money and you have the money available. That I call leverage. I have less of an issue with leverage than I do with debt. So, for example, if you have a mortgage that is, you know, at 2.3%, well, we already know that we can make more than that on our bank account. We might be able to make more than that even in the market. Granted, markets, you know, have volatility, fluctuations. You have to be aware of that and the risk involved with that. But typically, over time, historically, the market does much better than, you know, what your mortgage might cost at 2.3, 2.7, even 3.5, maybe even 4%. So it's great when I see where people have the money to pay off, you know, the debt that they have, the liability they have when that interest rate is so low. I call that leverage. But be aware of that cost that you may have. It would be great if you could get those worked down before you retire. But again, if the cost is so low, I'm not as worried about it on mortgages. The other thing that happens, what do we have? We have real estate taxes. We have repairs. Did you take care of the repairs before your anticipated retirement? You know, are you taking care of renovations or repairs or buying that new car before you retire when you have the cash flow to do it? You know, it's also really, really great when someone has the opportunity and ability to retire, like maybe last year, but they don't and you keep working. And then all of that is just extra money. And that extra money can help pay down those kinds of expenses. Now, when we talk about, so we talked about healthcare, we talked about mortgages, car payments, credit cards. You may have student loans that you signed off for your kids. Maybe it's time to turn those loans over to your kids. If you were just a co-signer, say, hey, you know, little Johnny, mom and dad signed, you know, co-signed for that. You're doing great. You got this great job. You just bought a fancy car. You just got a super nice apartment. I think you can afford these student loan payments now. Maybe it wasn't your intention to pay for their entire education. Be real with your kids. Let them know you're not a bottomless piggy bank for them. Now, let's talk about some of the cash flow. So we talked about expenses. If you can anticipate what those are, know what you're spending before you is kind of your pre-retirement planning. Know the timeline of those expenses. Maybe you're just going to have, like I gave as an example, the healthcare for maybe an extra 2 months or 6 months or maybe 5 years. Are you going to have the money to pay for that over that period of time? Kind of project that out. Then what are you going to use for your cash flow? Some people will have pensions. Some people don't. My brother, the one who I've been talking about through the show, he has a pension as well. So, and a great pension. Some people have better pensions than other people. So the pension could be a fixed income option for you. This is where you have to be careful on these projections. When we project out how much money we're going to have to cover our costs, what typically happens with pensions? We don't typically get a cost of living adjustment. I cannot remember the last time I saw a pension that had a cost of living adjustment. So as our costs typically go up, you know, whether it's car insurance, homeowners insurance, or rent, real estate taxes, while those groceries, gas, those expenses go up over time, even with small inflation, if your pension is going to stay fixed over time, if you even have one, then eventually the gap is going to get bigger and bigger. So how are you going to fill in that gap? So be aware of that. Number two, you might be getting Social Security. You want to be real careful as part of your pre-retirement planning about when you choose to get Social Security. Next week, I am going to talk about, I think, retirement planning a little bit more. This is kind of pre-retirement planning. Next week, I'm going to talk about, Next week, I'm going to do getting ready for tax season. Sorry. Next week's tax season. I do want to talk about thinking about through some of these retirement planning options when we talk about Social Security and when we choose to take Social Security. So the earliest you can take Social Security is age 62, but you take a big haircut. And for those people who were born like 1960 and later, if you collect at 62, you're taking an even bigger haircut than people used to years ago, than maybe your parents did. So we have a much bigger haircut. I think it's like 35% if you collect at 62 now. So watch out for that. The other thing, if once we're 65, if we're Medicare eligible and now we decide to go on Medicare, our Social Security is reduced by the Medicare premium. And that reduces the net amount of Social Security you have. Now, if you have other income on your tax return and some of your Social Security ends up getting taxed, then that's also a further haircut on your Social Security benefit because you might have to have tax withholding taken out of your Social Security. So people, if you're not planning and you're not doing the projection and you're just doing these numbers on the back of a napkin or you're just doing these numbers in your head, you might think you're getting more. And I will say that there is a tendency. Remember when I said people who know how much money they're spending are the ones who have money? Well, the people who don't know how much money they're spending or the people who think they have money really are quite often the ones who don't have money. So this is a little asterisk for you. Just be careful because I think there is a tendency for people who, you know, they tell me, that, oh, I want to retire. I want to retire at 62 and I'm going to take Social Security and, you know, maybe they're going to take their pension earlier if they have one. And they haven't thought through the haircut on the Social Security by taking it early. And they haven't thought through that there may be income tax on that Social Security. But in their mind, they only think about the gross amount of the benefit. And they look at their Social Security projection, the Social Security statement, where Social Security says, hey, here's what your benefit's going to be. And they say, oh, my benefit's going to be $4,000 a month. Well, that might be the benefit of age 70. Because if you wait to collect Social Security, there's like an 8% premium. If you wait beyond full retirement age, there's like an 8% premium on that benefit through it, you know, up until age 70. And when they give you the projection in Social Security, they're assuming you're working all of those years unless that projection includes the year where you're not working, where it's zero. So let's pretend you get you're working now and you get your Social Security projection. It's going to use your last year of income to project what your benefit is. If your last year of income still shows income, it's going to assume you're going to continue to make that money up and through all of those, you know, ages, those age benefits that they show you. They show age 62, they show age full retirement age, they show a whole graph of ages of the benefit you're going to get. But that assumes you're making that money that was last reflected on your earnings history. If your earnings history was zero on that projection, then that is more accurate and it will show you a more accurate estimate of what your benefit will be. So just be aware of that you might not be walking away with the money that you think. And in fact, some people keep working and maybe they make more money and your benefit actually might increase a tiny bit. It's less and less, you know, as we get closer to, you know, that full retirement age. So be aware of that. So the Social Security benefit, when you're doing your retirement planning, as my brother suggested, overestimate your cost and underestimate your resources to kind of give you a little bit of padding. So Social Security, watch out for that. And I mentioned that sometimes Social Security is taxed and people are surprised by that. Social Security gets included in your income, in your what we'll call your adjusted gross income, depending on how much other income you have on your return. So sometimes there are clients who look like they're in a very, very low tax bracket and their Social Security isn't taxed and they look like they're in a very low tax bracket and they might say, hey, Lori, let's take money out of the portfolio, or Lori, let's do a conversion of an IRA to a Roth because we're in a low tax bracket. Let's play those tax brackets. And I love playing tax brackets. But as soon as you put more money on your return, more of your Social Security will get taxed. So when you're doing your little pre-retirement planning, you have to kind of know what you're going to be doing because you might have more taxes due than you planned for when you start messing with putting extra income on your return after you've collected Social Security. If you wait to collect Social Security, you might be taking money out of your IRA, and if you don't need it, maybe you convert money to a Roth, and we don't have that kind of circular calculation on the taxable Social Security. So I really love that window of time before someone collects Social Security to be able to maybe do conversions or put more money on their tax return, play zero tax brackets on capital gains or 0% tax bracket on qualified dividends. It's nice to have that window before you collect Social Security, because once you collect Social Security, once you file, how much is taxable will be determined by these little formulas. So just a kind of a quick rule of thumb. If you're married filing joint and your income is under $32,000, then none of the Social Security would be taxable. That sounds good, Lori. That's not too bad. Maybe my Social Security is under $32,000. Oh, wait a minute, folks. There's a little formula. So it's not even as it appears. You have to do really a tax projection. As Stacy, our first caller, said, her friend was doing a little tax projection. Really important, because that $32,000 isn't exactly what you think. You have to actually add half the Social Security back to whatever other income's on your return. Plus, you have to add tax-exempt income, which you may or may not have. So all of a sudden, it's not really $32,000. It's like a weird kind of, I think they actually call it provisional income or something, provisional adjusted gross income. So you really, really want to make sure you understand all of the nuances of how Social Security gets taxed. Because again, this goes into your cash flow. Are you going to be able to afford your mortgage or your car payment or your credit card payments once you retire and you think you've got X amount of dollars from your pension and your Social Security, and it might net out to less than that, and it might be a little difficult. And then you're having to take money out of IRAs or retirement accounts if you have them. And now guess what we have? That circular calculation again on Social Security. So lots of little nuances. Folks, we're at the last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here in WDIY, also at WDIY.org under podcast or under a public affairs program and on the WDIY app, as well as many listening services. We are talking about retirement planning and specifically really pre-retirement planning to get ready for it. I mean, isn't it always better to kind of be ahead of these things, particularly, you know, just doing it kind of as a precaution in the world of, you know, layoffs or early retirements? You want to be ready in the event anything were to happen. We don't like surprises. We talked about Social Security. There's all different kinds of illustrations you can get for Social Security. You know, especially if you're married, you know, one files early, one files late, both file late, both, you know, one files at 65, one files at 62, one files at 70, one files at 62. It could be any different scenarios. There's tons and tons of them. I have software that does that for me. But just be aware of that and understand what your options are. If you have filed for Social Security pre-Medicare age, then once you reach Medicare age, you'll automatically be notified and Medicare will start coming out unless you have other qualified health insurance. If you have other qualified health insurance, you have to tell Social Security you don't need Medicare and show that you have qualified health insurance, and then you don't have to pay the Medicare at that point. But sometimes people will not file for Social Security until after age 65, but they'll go on Medicare. So then you're having to file for Medicare like 3 months before you're age 65. Then you, if you're not collecting Social Security, you'll have to write a check for that Medicare payment. So just be aware of that as well. And you don't want to miss out or mess up having either qualified health insurance or Medicare, because they penalize you if you don't take it. Let me quickly talk about pensions. Pensions also, there's lots of different options. Usually you can ask your HR people or go online to get an illustration of what are your pension options. Sometimes you can take a lump sum, meaning you have a net present value. There's a value today of that future stream of monthly payments they would otherwise pay you. Sometimes that's an option for you. It's called a lump sum, and it depends on how long you've worked there, what is your age, what was your salary, and what is the interest rates that determine what that lump sum benefit is. So you have to wait for an illustration. In a high interest rate environment, that lump sum is going to be smaller. In a low interest rate environment, that lump sum is going to be higher, typically. Okay, so when you're doing this retirement planning or pre-retirement planning, if you are someone who is eligible for a pension, think about that for a little minute. We might be seeing more lower interest rates, and that could impact the lump sum that you would be eligible for. So that could make a difference for you too. If you get a lump sum, you don't actually take it as a check, as a lump sum, and pay taxes on that whole amount. That is typically eligible to roll over to an IRA. And then you get to control when you take it out, other than the required minimum distribution, you get to control how you take it out. Whereas when you elect a pension option, a monthly benefit, then it's coming out and it's income taxable. And then that plays into that whole circular calculation of the taxable Social Security. So there are some people who actually have a lump sum pension option, and it may be to their advantage to select that, depending on their circumstances, if it can help control the income on their tax return. So there's other things to consider in the pension option. So, for example, if someone spends every dime they get, it could be a little scary if someone gives you a lump sum option and then you go and spend every penny of it, then maybe you're not really a good candidate for a lump sum. So really think hard about that. Maybe you would be better to get a monthly pension. You really have to look at your circumstances, your cash flow needs, your risk tolerance. Do you have others, a spouse or family who is relying on any of this money? Because there could be other pension options that might make more sense for you. So there's single life options, meaning if you collect your pension for 1 month and you die one month later, poof, the pension's gone. Whatever that present value of that future stream of money is that you earned working is poof, gone. So that's the single life. I'm not usually a fan of those. Then there's usually could be a single life with a term certain option, meaning, okay, I'll take the single life for a term certain, which might be 5 years or 10 years, meaning if I do die the next month, then the company would at least pay it out for a term certain, whether it's 5 years or 10 years. All of these options affect what that monthly amount is. Typically, when we have a spouse, I'm usually seeing a joint and survivor option, and that joint and survivor option could be 100% benefit. So if my monthly pension is going to be $3,000 a month, and I choose a single life, and I choose the joint, and if I die, joint and survivor option, it goes to my husband, and I choose 100%, my monthly benefit might go to $2,700. Well, that might be a good deal if, I'm sick or I don't have longevity in my family. I do. My mother's still alive at 94, knock on wood. My spouse would step into the 100% survivor benefit, but there could be a 75% survivor or 50% survivor. Maybe my spouse already has a pension and maybe he doesn't need my pension. So I do a 50% survivor. That way my monthly amount could be higher. All right. So you have to understand, we already said Social Security options and your pension options if they're available to you. So remember, let's go back to how I said we're going to manage our costs. We're going to be aware of our costs. We're going to kind of understand our cost in this pre-retirement planning world that we have. And then I said, let's look at our resources. And maybe if we have healthcare costs, I said we might be able to manage those a little bit. So remember, I mentioned that if you're pre-age 65, pre-Medicare, and you could be eligible for a COBRA, you could be eligible for a spouse's health insurance. But if you're not, you have options for private health insurance or perhaps going on the exchange marketplace, healthcare.gov, Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. It's all the same thing. Penny.com, depending on what state you live in. You may be eligible for some help called the Advanced Premium Tax Credit, depending on what income is on your tax return. And I said, maybe we could control that income on your tax return. You're just retiring. You're in a transition period. You don't know what life's going to look like. You don't know what kind of money you're going to need. You don't know how you're going to spend. Let's manage your income for a little bit while you ease into this retirement, while you ease into this transition. How do we control the income on your tax return? If you tell me you need $100,000 and the only assets you have are IRAs and we have to take money out of the IRA, well, we got income on your return and you're probably not going to qualify for any of these credits. But if you also tell me you have $500,000 sitting in a savings account or $500,000 sitting in a brokerage account with investments outside of retirement accounts, we can certainly manage that. Remember, $100,000, if you tell me, and your only resource is an IRA, we have $100,000 of taxable income. If you tell me you need $100,000 out of your bank account, how much taxable income is that? Well, it's zero on cash. You might have some interest income, but we don't have a $100,000 taxable event like we would an IRA. If you have it in investments and we have to take money out of a brokerage account, would we be able to find $100,000 in your brokerage account without the same $100,000 tax consequence? Probably. If you invested maybe, you know, 5 years ago, $100,000, and that $100,000 has turned into, you know, $130,000 in 5 years. You know, I don't know. What did I say? $100,000 turns into $130,000. Then I could take $100,000 out of your brokerage account and the, you know, only, you know, maybe $10,000 would be taxable because we have cost basis in that. So we could pull the money of $100,000 and it doesn't mean it's going to be $100,000 of taxable income on your tax return. Now I have people who invested, you know, 30 years ago, and if we pulled $100,000 out of their account, out of their brokerage account, they might have $100,000 of gains. But, you know, this is where I talked about at the beginning of the show. It's nice to have different buckets to pull from. So it's not just your pension or your Social Security or your IRA. It could be your savings. It could be your brokerage account. And of course, regular listeners know my favorite, Roth IRAs. Roth IRAs are income tax free, but there are some rules around Roth IRAs. You really can't take out the earnings the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half, the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half, the earnings without penalty. So you want to be aware of that. But once you've had it 5 years and age 59 and a half, you can take out the earnings income tax free. That's regular Roth. If you've done a conversion, there's different rules. Those conversion amounts reset every year and you have to hold those 5 years. But you can always take out your original contributions without tax, because you didn't get a tax deduction when you put money in the Roth. I love those. They're especially great for young people because it's a great way for them to get to save and to get it growing income tax-free. And what is the power that is the best thing going, like ice cream? Compounding. So compounding, the sooner you save, the more it can compound over time. And, you know, I had Bill Henderson, our head of investments, on at one time, and he loves quoting these numbers. He figures it out. You know, you put in this amount of money into a Roth IRA, and in X number of years, it's worth, you know, $1 million. Don't have my HP12C with me right now, but looking at the time value of money, if you can get something growing income tax-free over a long period of time and not touching it, that's another bucket you could pull from if needed. And we've from time to time have tweaked that for folks when they need some funds. It's a way to maybe get a little bit of extra income in their cash flow without impacting those circular calculations on Social Security or whatever it might be. All right. So pre-retirement planning. Just to kind of, and I didn't talk about tax rates at all, and I didn't talk about, you know, paying attention to that because your tax rates could completely change in retirement as well. I will mention that I often talk to clients about transitions. We have a number of transitions in our life, you know, transition when we get married, when we have children, when we, you know, some people divorce or retire is a transition. Illness could be a transition. Death could be a transition. A death of a spouse, death of a parent, you inherit. There's different transition periods in our life, but retirement is a transition. And I think it's one sometimes the hardest transition because you don't always know what to expect. You feel quite a bit of security when you're working and you have that cash flow coming in, and then you kind of feel like the floor drops out from underneath you. But it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to if you do some planning and you know, it can be a lot of fun, actually. And it's quite empowering when you're the one who's taking control of it and understanding it. And as I say, when you're in front of your decisions, you have more options. So as I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive, because you have many more options. Folks, we are at the end of the show. I want to thank Bob and Cindy for being here. Thank you, James. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers, for calling in with your questions, which can always be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, I am going to talk about getting ready for tax season, using your tax return to help you do that. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.